So, to our Bible class, and talking about sharing the gospel with other people, this is the last lesson in this series of lessons that we've been focusing on evangelism. Does anybody have a study guide, by the way? A few more of them over there if you don't have one. We're going to be looking in this particular lesson at specifics of what can we do to be more outreach-oriented, more evangelistic-oriented, focusing on our individual, not just us collectively as a church, but individually, what kind of things can we be doing to be reaching out and helping to save souls. Over the last couple of weeks, in the last lesson that we've had, we focused a lot on foreign missions. And as we've talked about, you know, with Colonel and Kelly and getting them, sending them off to China to do their work and all those different things that we can be involved in with that and trying to encourage them and help them to accomplish that aspect. But then we go back to where we started with this whole study to begin with, and that is, again, our own personal involvement in reaching out to other people and being able to share the gospel with people and bring people to the Lord. We're going to look at some specific things, some specific attitudes, and some specific things that we can do personally to make that happen. And what I have planned to do when we finish this lesson, this lesson, as I said a moment ago, this is the last in this series of them, we're going to do something where we're going to spend at least a few weeks looking at some specific things that are available to actually do Bible studies with people. We're going to look at some of those things. We'll share some of those things with everybody, and so you can see how these things are used and what's available. But those are some things personal evangelism-wise. If you actually want to sit down and can't have somebody to sit down and do a Bible study with, we have some things available, and we want to kind of go over those things and show you some of those things. And we've done that before, but we want to do it again. You know, we've got a lot of new people here that weren't here before, and so we're going to do some of that for a couple of weeks. But let's focus on, okay, how do we really make personal evangelism personal? Okay? To where we're actually getting involved in reaching out to other people in their lives, and what are some of the things that we can do. If you look at the very bottom of the front page of this thing, under the examine it, the question there, in what ways are you participating? And that's the key word here. Underline participating or circle it on your page, what have you. In what ways are you participating in taking the gospel to your neighborhood and city? So that's a question that we're going to be examining, looking at what ways can we all participate. Here's one of the things that I want you to keep in mind. Let me put it in the form of a question. Can we all, or do we all necessarily have to participate in the same ways? No, we don't, or no, we can't? Both? Okay. All right. Explain it.
Different personalities have different focus.
Okay. All right.
Sometimes it's immediate need.
Okay.
Sometimes it's invite message. Everybody has their way of time to them.
Okay. All right. So personalities certainly do play a role in that as to how we, you know, reach people and interact with people and so forth. What other things do we need to consider in this that will be different? Do what?
Talents.
Okay, talents.
Each child has different ways of doing things. Maybe me being an auto mechanic, maybe there's something for somebody.
Okay.
That opportunity to reach out.
Okay. Exactly. We have different abilities and different interests that we have and so forth, so we need to focus on those things. And you know me, we talk about cars all the time. You know, for me to try to do an auto, you know, evangelism program, that would be a failure right from the beginning, you know, because I don't do cars very well except to drive them. Brian is a great example. Brian's an auto mechanic. You know, he knows what to do with cars. And so, you know, again, each one of us has different things. What else? What other things do we need to consider in terms of how we might participate differently in outreach and in reaching people? Okay? Explain.
Well, some people may work 12-hour jobs.
Okay. Okay.
So they have more time to be involved. And, you know, it just depends on
what you're doing. Okay. Some have children. Some of us are older. I know you didn't want to say that. But, you know, all those kinds of things make a difference as to what you're able to do in that regard. Chuck, you had your hand up.
One thing that limits us is our faith.
Okay. Okay.
But I admire him. I want to aspire him to do anything, to grow in
okay.
His
way
to where I can.
And, you know, that's a good point in that, and I think that sometimes people are intimidated in reaching out because, you know, as we've talked about so many different times in this study as we've been doing, you know, the whole idea of I don't know the Bible well enough or, I've never done that before, and what if they ask me this question or they ask me something, you know. Again, that level of faith and so forth, I think sometimes can keep us from doing even, you know, the little things that we can do. I've mentioned many times before, you know, Brother Paul Rogers used to talk about the people in his church, you know, that, you know, he just referred to as grinners. You know, every church needs to have grinners. If you don't know what grinners are, those are the people that invite their friends and neighbors and all to come to worship services, and then they sit there in the pew and grin, you know, because they brought a visitor, you see. That was something that they could do, you know, and so it's sometimes starting out, if, you know, our faith is going, well, I don't feel confident I can sit down and lead a Bible study with someone, but could I invite someone to a Bible study? You know, that kind of a thing. Or can I, as we've talked about, and we'll talk about here in a little bit more, is, you know, open my home to have a Bible study in my home, you know, to host it. Just like, you know, like Kitty did, you know. Kitty'd be the last person in the world to try to actually sit down and open the Bible and try to do a Bible study with someone, but she certainly was on fire to open her home, and if you want to come and have a Bible study and at her house, then it was there, and she'd always make sure that you had cake, you know, afterwards, you know. Great example of how sometimes our faith, our level of faith and our knowledge. But the point is that these differences that we have in the ways that we can participate, they are different, but those differences should not keep us from doing whatever it is we can do. We've got to find those things, whether it's our personality and how we do things, whether it's our lifestyle and what are we available, it's our talents and abilities, our faith level. We've got to figure that out and find out, okay, what can I do? And then do it, you see. So that question is an important one, you know, for us to really look at and to keep looking at in what ways are you participating, you see. What can you do? We all can participate somehow, but we're going to participate in different ways. Let's look at the inside here. Explain it and express it. What can I do? The question. First of all, we're going all the way back to the beginning of this study, where we started out looking at Jesus in terms of his whole approach and attitude to making disciples. One of the key words that we looked at in those very first couple of studies that we had, does anybody recall? Tom, you look like you got it right on the tip. Okay, he had a vision. And he had compassion. Okay. Nicole? Yeah. We talked about him being compelled to do this, and it was, and because of that vision and that compassion that he had, he couldn't do otherwise. See? And remember, we talked about the whole fact that, God, the Creator, was compelled to save His creation. See? And so Jesus came here with that compulsion, with that vision, and with the compassion to reach out to a lost world. Okay? And if we are truly to be like Christ, we need to have that vision and that compassion and feel the compulsion to share the gospel with other people who are lost. So we start out in looking at this, and the first one here, what can I do, is care. Going back over to Mark chapter 6, verse 34, you know, what do you see there when Jesus is looking at, you know, these multitudes of people? What is it telling us here about Jesus looking at these multitudes and he sees them as what? Like sheep who are without a shepherd. Okay? How do we see people that are out here? And again, let's go back to one of our original things also that we were talking about. Where are we talking about here? In our Jerusalem. Okay? Let's just go back to our Jerusalem. We're not talking about going to China right now, you know, any of that. We're just talking about our Jerusalem, where we live. Again, remember, the disciples, Jesus told them that you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem first, okay, Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth, okay? So we're going back to our Jerusalem. So get that in your frame of mind here as we're looking at these things. As you look at the people in your Jerusalem, how do you see them? What do you see? We're talking about your family members who are not Christians. We're talking about co-workers. We're talking about neighbors. When you look at them, how do you see them? Okay, an opportunity? Okay. How else do you see them? Lost? Okay. But are those statements of fact rather than feelings? See, in other words, we can see people, we can see the facts of the situation. Yes, there is an opportunity because these people are lost. But what do I need to have to move on that? Passion. Okay?
So that was a different answer.
Yeah. That's why I put it that way, because I know it's... You know, these, as we've talked about this all along, you know, we got to look inside. And these are tough questions for us. It's tough for us to really look and say, okay, this is what I can do, but have I really been doing it? And again, we go all the way back to the beginning of the study, and how we look at people, how we view people makes all the difference in the world. It's easy to look at people as being lost, isn't it? I mean, we can kind of go down the list and go, yeah, they're lost, they're lost, they're lost, they're lost. But we're not going to really do anything about it until we see the compassion. We have the compassion for what we see, and we see it as an opportunity. Okay? And now we're going to do something about it. Okay? So, thinking about your family, your friends, neighbors, whoever, you know, again, how are you seeing them? How are you looking at them? Do you look at them, you know, like they're lost and recognize they're lost? And what do you feel? Okay? Look at the passage in Romans 9. Okay? And this question here, somebody turn over to Romans 9, 1 through 3 and read that for us if you would. Okay.
I say the truth in Christ, I lie not, my conscience also bearing me witness from the Holy Ghost, that I have great heaviness, continual sorrow in my heart. For I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brother, my kinsman, according to the flesh, who are Israelites, to whom pertaineth to the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law, of the service of God and of the promises. Through the fathers and whom are concerning the flesh, Christ came, who is over all, God bless forever. Amen.
Okay. How much did Paul care about his brothers in the flesh? That's the question here. Read that statement.
And he said he could almost give up his own salvation.
Yeah. The New International Version, verse 3, says, "For I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers." Okay? What is Paul really saying? Would you, okay, just think about this, would you be willing to sacrifice your own soul in order to save someone else? That's a tough question, folks. That's a tough question. Of course, Paul is talking about, you know, not just one person, but the nation of Israel, his people. But just think about that concept. Knowing all that Paul knew when he wrote these words about salvation and what he was looking forward to, and to be able to say, you know, basically that if it could save my brethren, I would be willing to forfeit my own salvation. How much compassion is required to really come to that point? Well, I think that Paul is expressing here that deep, I mean, this is an expression of deep compassion for the Israelite people. They're saying, what he's trying to say here in part is, look, they're lost, and I know they're lost. I want them to be saved so much that if there were a way to do it, if there were a way to save the Israelite people, and the only way to do that was for me to lose my soul, then I would do that in order to save them. It's the spiritual equivalent of someone laying down their physical life for someone else. If my, you know, dying physically is going to keep you alive, if I have to throw myself in front of the car or whatever to keep you from dying, then, you know, physically, then I'll do that basically. You know, spiritually, from a spiritual perspective, that's what Paul is saying here. You know, if that could happen, if there were a way to do that. Of course, I think, you know, Paul realizing you can't spiritually do that for someone else. You can't die in order to save someone else spiritually. The only person that could accomplish that was Christ, and he already did that, right? Okay? So, spiritually, it couldn't happen, but he's basically expressing the deep sentiments of his heart and the compassion that he had for his people. How much love he had for them and how much a strong desire he had that they would be able to come to know Christ.
And where we can't fathom what Paul just said there, we can no more fathom what Jesus did, what God did, yeah. That his son died for all those sinners.
Okay, but here's the reason I want you to focus. I mean, you just kind of really get that in. You soak that whole concept in, saying, okay, you know, to be able to say, I would forfeit my salvation, my soul, for them to be saved. Okay? I mean, think about it this way. Is there anything else that you can think of that is more valuable than your soul? I mean, is there anything else that you could, you know, that you would give up that would be more valuable than that? Okay? So that whole concept, I mean, that's really what Paul's wanting us to understand, is that concept. I mean, that's the ultimate. You know, saying that, yes, I would, you know, if it could be accomplished, because I love them so much, I want them to be saved, I want them to find salvation, I want them to find Christ, that if my losing my soul would make that happen, then I would do that. Okay? What aren't you willing to give up in order to save someone's soul. Maybe your favorite TV program during the week as to why you can't, you know, host a Bible study in your home. Is it your home itself in terms of, you know, you don't want people coming over and messing up your stuff or seeing the mess that you have, or it's not clean enough, or, you know, which would then kind of be, you'd be sacrificing what? The impression that other people have of you and that kind of thing. Think about it in those kinds of terms. What's keeping you, what are you not willing to give up in order to have other people saved? And you start looking at some of the trivial things that stand in the way of our reaching out to people. I don't want to lose my job, so I'm not going to say anything. You know, we've talked about that before. Job, soul, where do they balance out, even come close? And who gave you your job to begin with? You don't think he could give you a better one?
Another concept here, looking at with Paul, is he knew the seriousness of this situation. And the seriousness that he wasn't willing to dedicate or give up that they would truly be lost. How dire straight this world is. The only way I can compare is when we were talking about that is police officers, firefighters, EMS, to go into a bad situation and realize how bad it really is, and if they are not willing to jeopardize their life,
right,
somebody may lose theirs.
Right.
And Paul realized how the seriousness of it. And I think a lot of times, even today's Christianity, a lot of times we have spectators, yeah, not participators. And a lot of people look and, hey, this is a great show, this is a great story, and nobody's really seeing the seriousness of where we're at.
Yeah. I don't know that we really are contemplating deeply. We say they're lost, but do we really contemplate what that means? You say, in terms of, we're talking about eternal destiny here. Yeah, absolutely.
My sister is expressing it as well, and my dad always was a very good person.
Okay.
He didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to be pushed into it. He wanted nothing to do with it. But then at 68 years old, this last year, he went on long as old, but my dad was in the church and died.
Amen.
And when he was asked why he took the church to come, he said, well, I've got to do what I want to do. Check the statement of why it's in it. And now he can't find him by the Bible on the
pad. Yeah, absolutely. And we never know what that influence is. And, of course, that's going to be part of what we're going to come to, you know, a bit later on, is the way that we live our lives is one of the things that we've got to pay attention to. Because, again, you don't know what kind of influence it's going to have on someone doing that. But, when the Scriptures tell us that Jesus looked at these disciples and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Okay? That sounds good. It's good literature. But think about it from the standpoint of what would it mean to be a sheep without a shepherd? Okay? What would happen to the sheep if there were no shepherd looking after them?
I think we have a hard time sometimes with some of the more agrarian analogies like this, because we don't have what Jesus saw was the wolves.
Yeah. Yeah. The sheep are what? They're lost without the shepherd, you see. If they don't have someone to care for them, basically, and this ought to make you feel really good, okay, the Scriptures, shepherding was a big thing in the Bible times. That was, one of the main ways of, livelihood and so forth. I've never been a shepherd, but I've read some stuff about, sheep and how, what you have to do with them. Sheep are dumb, okay? And from everything I've been able to find out, sheep are one of the dumbest creatures on the earth, okay? They're nice and soft and woolly, and, they make, great wool for fabric and so forth, but they're dumb as bricks, okay? Now, how does that make you feel that God, uses sheep as an analogy to talk about us, okay? You know, how dumb can we be sometimes, all right? We, without a shepherd, our condition is hopeless because, you know, on our own, you know, a sheep, you leave it to itself, it's going to get into trouble. I mean, they're just going to wander off. Oh, look at this grass over here. Looks really good. I'll go and eat some of that, you know. And, I mean, you know, if you ever watched sheep before, you know, on the thing, and they're, you know, you got them, their shepherds letting them out of the pen or letting them in, and one of the things I understand they do is they will mimic whatever the sheep in front of them does. If they're in a line and they're going through a gate, for instance, they will do exactly what the sheep in front of them do. That's why you see them sometimes where one of them will jump, you know, and then every one of them behind it will jump because that's what the one in front of them, they mimic exactly what is the one in front of them did, you see. You know, without someone looking after, sheep are, they're vulnerable because they don't look after themselves very well. And because we're people, you know, and God uses that analogy that we're sheep, without a shepherd looking after us, without someone looking after us, we're lost. Okay? We really need to get a grasp on what that concept really means. How are we doing time-wise? Somebody got to watch the time. You guys got to look after me there. I could, you know. But Brian, you know, what you mentioned about the police and firemen, you know, a perfect example of how policemen and firemen will, you know, will go in and do what they got to do, literally lay their life on the line to save other people. But because, why? They understand the danger that people are in a lot more than even the person oftentimes that's in the danger. A lot of times they're out there doing things and rescuing people from themselves when the person doesn't even realize how much danger they're in. But they put themselves in harm's way in order to protect that person and to rescue them because they recognize the danger. By the way, I just read an article this morning, as a matter of fact, had the 10 best occupations health-wise and the 10 worst occupations health-wise, police and firemen were number one of the 10 worst occupations health-wise. And that's one of the reasons that they had listed, because of the constant danger that they are in and that they will put themselves in harm's way in order to, you know, to do their job. And so it's the worst job out there in terms of health and personal safety on the job. But it's for that reason, because they know the danger. I mean, one of the routine things that policemen do that we all hate tremendously is they stop people and they write them tickets, don't they? You know, and why do they do that? No, it's not, Peggy. It's because they got a quota and they have to write a certain number of tickets every month, right? Yeah, that's Jerry's reason. He's been contributing to the policeman's fund retirement system for a long time, hadn't he? but in reality, that's what it is. How many people did I ever stop and they get upset with you for, you know, writing them a ticket or what have you? And the main reason that you're doing it is because you know that they're doing something that's very risky, and they don't realize the danger that they're putting themselves and other people in. But that's why you do it. Okay? But those kinds of things are what we're talking about. Those attitudes, those ideas, we can see that very easily when it comes to our physical lives, can't we? And the things that are involved there, we've got to transfer that to the spiritual side of things. You see? You know, one of the things that we've talked about a lot in our different Bible classes, we talked about it a lot even in this one. We looked at the whole spiritual aspect of what the Israelites were missing when Christ came along. Okay? That they were, you know, they were looking for the Messiah, but what kind of Messiah were they looking for? They were looking for an earthly king that was going to come and get rid of the Romans and set up his kingdom and sit on David's throne, and they were going to be, you know, have the kingdom of all kingdoms and so forth. They were focused physically, and so they missed the spiritual. And it's easy for us to look at that. We read the scriptures and we see that and we go, what dumb Israelites. I tell you, You know, if they just opened their eyes, they'd been able to see what it was all about. But really, watch your toes, folks, okay? Aren't we guilty of the same thing? We can see the physical aspects of these things very easily, but are we making the spiritual connection with these things? Okay, Ms. Jean? Okay. What we're required to do, right? That's right. Obey the laws of the land. But we have got to transfer those understandings of those things physically, in the physical world we live in, to the spiritual aspect of it and being concerned about those who are lost. Okay? Until we do that, we're never really going to have the compassion that it takes, and the compassion that Christ had, the compassion that Paul had for those who are lost, and then being willing then to give up some things, to lose some things in order that other people would be saved. Okay? Again, whether it's our favorite TV show or, you know, outing time or whatever it is that, you know, stands in the way. Because think about it this way. What Paul said about being willing to forfeit his soul in order that the Israelites would be saved, you have to keep in mind that God commanded his disciples to do what when it comes to evangelism? Okay. That we are supposed to be out teaching people, making disciples, right? And he gave that command to the preachers and the elders, right? Be careful, because y'all are going to convict yourselves here. Okay? Just the preachers. He gave it to all Christians, right? Okay? We all have that responsibility. And it is a command, right? Not a suggestion, right? Okay? So, therefore, if we don't do what he has commanded, what are we doing? Thus, therefore, we are going. Exactly. We're going to end up losing our soul because we haven't obeyed the commands of Christ. So is it really that much different than what Paul was saying here? Okay. Make sense? I know your toes are sore. I don't apologize for sore. Got that backwards. Poor souls. Sore toes. Chuck, y'all know that by now. I usually do. I wanted to catch you this morning. Did you have a... Oh, that was it. Okay. You're just getting after me for not warning you or stepping on your toes. But, you know, we've got to go back and really take a self-examination of this. And it's easy to focus on the physical things and say, well, yeah, I'd be willing to do this, I'd be willing to do that, but you know, when it comes down to it, what am I willing to sacrifice that someone might be saved? I'm never going to be willing to sacrifice anything if I don't really understand what it means to be lost. Right? Because that's got to be the first step, is having that compassion for the lost. I've got to understand what it means. Those who are lost. I did something that Brian and I have talked about this, you know, a number of times. I think Brian is absolutely crazy. I think all firemen are crazy. They're willing to run into a building that is burning. It's on fire. But as I told him one time when I was a policeman, I actually did that. And, you know, that was crazy as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's nuts to run into a burning building, I think. I'd rather have people shooting at me. At least I can shoot back, okay? You know, but, you know, fire is indiscriminate. It doesn't care, you know, who you are or anything else. You know, so those guys do something that I think is absolutely, completely insane. But they do it because they understand the danger and the risk to those who are inside of losing their life. And, that's the kind of compassion that we've got to have for people who are lost. And when we have that, we feel it, then we'll run into the burning building, okay, of people's lives to rescue them. Any other thoughts? We're about out of time here this morning. I think Ms. Jean? It's, and we've talked about many, many times, it's not our job, you know, to make them obey the gospel. We can't do that. But it is our responsibility and our job to at least make it available to them, to teach it to them. Okay. Remember, Jesus had disciples that turned and quit following him. You know, they're not going to follow us either, many aren't. That's not the point. The point is we've got to try, do everything we can, all right? Okay, I want to encourage you to look at the next section, which is very familiar to us since we've been focusing a lot on prayer over the last, you know, year and a half, almost 2 years now. But that's the next question. What can I do? Pray. And we're going to be talking about some very specific things, and then we're going to come to that the part that that you brought up. Larry? Jerry. One of the two. You know, talking about, okay, what about the influence that we have on the way that we live? I want you to look at those two sections in here for next week, and we're gonna try and talk about both of those. All right? Thank you very much.
Thank you.